thought you knew, but you had no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
What's going on, world? We're back again.
We are back.
No, I can't.
I can hear.
Well, as long as you can hear me, that's all that matters.
I don't know about hearing. Test it. Okay, we're on though.
Yeah, I can't hear you, but I can hear you through the headphones. So.
You can hear the headphones?
Nah, I can just hear you without, you know, all that other good stuff.
You sure?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I can't hear me, though. We're on, though. I can tell we're on. Oh, wait, hold on. Let me make sure. You can hear me now, though. I can hear you now. There you go.
Okay, there we go.
There we go. Okay, it's the Urban
Super Sports. Producer engineer, exactly. Waliola.
I told you, man. It's the music. The music caught us off guard because it was so super loud. I feel like I lost the eardrum already. Jeez Louise. Anyways, the Urban Sports Scene. If you haven't noticed, usually last couple weeks we had King Al, but now we have our original, the originator, my tag team partner in this big Urban Sports Scene thing. Mr. Will T.
What's going on, sir? How you doing?
I've been good, man. What's up with you, man? You been
Nothing a little bit. Much. Yeah. Dealing with some allergies, bronchitis. So had to get that dealt with, and now I'm back healthier, better than ever.
Yeah, and honestly, you're doing big things right now.
Not me.
Oh, man. B-Hop, you know, according to B-Hop and company, you was doing some big things. You out there covering the fight?
Nah, I mean.
In the DMV? The Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. So, yeah, you out there doing it.
Nah, man. I just had a... an incredible opportunity to go to the Bernard Hopkins fight this past Saturday and cover the fight. You know, for those of you who don't know, he defended his belt against Shuvanov for the light heavyweight to unify the light heavyweight championship. Also on the card was Paulie Malignaggi versus Sean Porter and Peter Quillen.
We can definitely get into that, but real quick, make sure you listen to the Voice of the Fan podcast show at www.blogtalkradio.com/thevoiceofthefan. The show is hosted by Alex and Jeff. The show is pretty similar to ours. They're my homies, so make sure you check them out. Also, check out our show, which is syndicated on the internet radio station, Real People Real Talk Radio. The site is managed by our good friends from Apple G's, so make sure you visit the site. It's www.realpeoplerealtalk.com. And make sure you call in. The phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904.
All right, let's get into our tradition of pregame.
Okay, like I mentioned, like Will pretty much broke it down earlier. Excuse me, not that early, but Bernard Hopkins wins the fight against Shuvanov.
Bilal Shuvanov.
All right, please tell us about your experience.
It was a great experience. I actually got press credentials, so I got to sit in press row, probably three rows behind to watch the fight.
Okay.
There were a lot of people there from not only local media but national media. You know, a lot of boxing geeks, boxing junkies like myself. Met a lot of nice people. Met some people that work for Showtime.
Oh, nice.
It was packed, about 7,000 people.
Getting cards.
Got a lot of numbers from people.
Oh yeah, my man.
About 7,000 people. There were a couple local fights on the undercard, on the untelevised undercard. I got a chance to see the last one. But I was kind of talking to people, so I paid it a little bit of attention, but I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. So I was talking to a lot of people. Met Tom Lavero from ESPN 980.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, that was
cool.
He's
a big boxing fan too.
Yeah, huge boxing fan.
Yeah. So you had a good conversation with him?
Didn't have a lot of conversation with him because I was, you know, enthralled into the fight. But I actually did meet Jim Vance. He sat right beside me.
You met Jim Vance?
Yeah.
March Madness?
Jim Vance, no, you know,
NBC4.
Oh, Jim
Vance, I'm thinking about, what's his name, I'm sorry, NBC4. Oh, I heard he's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's really cool.
I heard
dude.
He's pretty cool.
He had two bad ones with him.
Yeah, I heard he's,
I think
I heard,
I,
heard
I,
he's
I think
it
was his wife, or I don't know, I'm not sure. I'm not going to speak on it. I'm not going to speak on it. But he seemed to be enjoying himself during the fight, and the conversation, he seemed to be, would be enjoying himself after the fight also. So that was cool.
What do you mean after the fight?
When everybody's leaving and going home.
He was having a good time?
Yes. He's having a great time.
Tell us about the actual fight.
As I stated, there were three cards on the televised, three fights on the televised card. The first fight was a Peter Quillen fight, which was extremely uneventful. Peter Quillen, he didn't do a lot to increase his stock. He did the things that you would like to see from a young fighter at his you know, you would want to see more from him where he's at the period in his career and the progression. He fought an outmatched, I forgot the guy's name, but he was originally from 154 pounds, who moved up to middleweight. Peter Quillen caught him with an assortment of jabs and uppercuts to the body and left hooks to the body. Uppercuts to the chin and left hooks to the body. So that fight was really uneventful. People were really wary and really like, all right, let's get it on. Like, you know, when we going to see some action? And then consequently, the Paulie Malignaggi and Sean Porter fight, everyone got the action that they wanted from the opening bell. Sean Porter really just dominated Paulie Malignaggi in a way that few people can say what they want about Paulie Malignaggi. But there are only guys who are at a certain elite level have only beaten him. But Sean Porter definitely made a statement, and I actually wrote an article on this fight that Wally's going to post from on our website, and is actually being posted to eastsideboxing.com and a couple other various sites on just basically how I think we have another contestant in the money sweepstakes in boxing. That's Sean Porter. You know, he's at 147 pounds. He's fights welterweight, and just this fight, definitely he did what he was supposed to do, which you're supposed to do, being a co-feature on a nationally televised card. He came out and he dominated a good fighter, a fighter who's at a different class and level that he's fought previously, with a fourth round knockout of Paulie Malignaggi.
Yeah, and Will's articles. He wrote two articles. We posted on the Urban Sportsing blog spot website, which is www.urbansportsing.blogspot.com. Will did a great job. I'm really a fan of his article. I read it. It was real. It was nice. And also a big shout out to West Coast Dilla Fan from the Sports Crib, which who can help Will get press credentials. Excuse me. Big shout out to them and West Coast Dilla Fan. Also, excuse me.
And Joe Heron right also.
Joe, cool guy.
Joe really helped me out as far as because I'm not a journalist. I don't have any experience writing articles or anything like that. So he really helped me be concise in my writing style and really told me a couple of good secrets, you know, as far as, you know, everyone's going to write something on the fight,
exactly,
on a write-up on it, but you want yours to differentiate from everyone else's and put a fresh spin and perspective on it. I think I tried to do that with those two articles.
Yeah, I think you did a great job.
And the second and the most important was the historic fight between Shuvanov and Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins unified light heavyweight championship. Excuse me. In Washington, D.C., at a place in the Stadium Armory where and it's written in my article that that's the first one of the first live boxing fight. It is the first live boxing fight I've ever seen, which was the Roy Jones versus Bernard Hopkins fight. It was on the undercard of Riddick Bowe and Ferguson at the historic RFK Stadium. I know Wally would get on me if I didn't say historic.
Yeah, he's right about that. Exactly. the best stadium ever. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. You know, Bernard Hopkins, it was a classical B-hop fight. You know, he started out slow, trying to find his distance, letting Shuvanov try to get just close enough so he'll be able to work on the inside and be able to work that shoulder roll with the lead right. Action picked up towards the end of the third round with Bernard Hopkins starting to land at will overhand rights and also using his dirty tactics, leading with his head while he's clenching, using the short right
hand.
That
Philly style, man.
Yeah. And then the middle rounds, you know, was basic, was primarily dominated by Bernard Hopkins, dominated with lead rights, left hooks to the body. You know, Shuvanov is a volume puncher, so he was throwing a lot of punches. Then Bernard Hopkins would just step to his left and find a place to hit him with a 1-2 combination. Then finally, in the 11th round, the magic happened. He knocked down Shuvanov. Everyone thought that he was out. He knocked him out. And, you know, that would have been his first knockout since 2004 when he faced Oscar De La Hoya, but it didn't happen. And, you know, came out in the 12th round. He did something that a lot of people didn't expect him to do. He really put his foot to the pedal on in the 12th round to really go for the knockout and really please the crowd. And, you know, Bernard Hopkins, he played towards the crowd the whole night.
Which is odd. He doesn't usually play to the crowd. He does his own thing.
Well, I think DC has a special place in his heart.
Why is that?
Well, it's the, you know, it's one of the places that, you know, it's not his home, Philadelphia, but, you know, he always has a very strong support from people in boxing fans in DC. And he, you know, he kind of played to that when he came out with burgundy and gold trunks and gloves. You know, a lot of people, it was a loud ovation, a loud roar once he took off his robe and everyone saw the burgundy and gold. So all in all, it was a great fight.
He had the execution mask though?
He had the alien mask on because he goes by the alien now. But he did throw the X up.
He goes by the alien now?
Yeah, he did. No, go ahead.
Kind of fits. Go ahead.
But he did throw the X up to the crowd when he got into the ring. Then after the fight, had an opportunity to sit by his, you know, sit on his press conference. Got a couple quotes. Actually met brother Nassim Richardson, which was cool.
Oh, you met him?
Yeah,
met his trainer?
Yeah, I met his trainer.
Wow.
Talked for a little bit. That's talked cool. for about 5 minutes of just about boxing. And, talked about Bernard Hopkins' dedication. Just talked about the game, period, boxing in general.
You had a good experience. You had a real good experience.
Yeah, it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. Like, once again, I just want to thank everybody who made it, you know, possible for me to cover the fight live. And most likely, I'm not going to say hopefully, but more than likely, you know, whenever live events in the area, you know, whether Atlantic City, New York,
East Coast.
Yeah, I'll probably be covering those fights live, and Wally will be there with me.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I'm going to be down there. I'll be gambling. If it's Atlantic City, I'll be gambling. They'll be watching the fight. You know, usually Atlantic City is a big place for big fights, usually, especially like, well, HBO fights too.
Well,
is it Showtime? What Showtime covers?
Well, no. Well, Golden Boy, which is Showtime, they're trying to move into the market of fighting at the Barclays Center.
Oh, okay.
So you might see some big time Golden Boy productions going on at the Barclays Center from a lot of the rumors that I heard from, you know, people talking to Richard Schaefer, who was the CEO while I was at the fight. So 2014, 2015, look out for a lot of big fights in Brooklyn.
Okay, we down. I'm digging it. Right, again, thanks, West Coast Dillard fan from the Sports Crib, and also Joe.
Heron.
I just know him by Joe. Joe Heron, because that's what I do. I'm on the Sports Crib.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, you know, hosts the show.
Okay.
And he's like the moderator of the whole thing. But, yeah, thanks to you two. We really appreciate you giving Will the press credentials so that you can cover this for the Urban Sports scene, and it's going to actually help you guys out as well. Hopefully, you know, we continue to have this relationship and continue to do bigger and better things. But let's move on down to the pregame. The Niners will likely pass on the option to keep Aldon Smith in 2015.
Given all the troubles he's had over the past couple of years, you know, and although his production has been up there, he's been one of the best pass rushers since he's came into the league. Excuse me. If I was them, I wouldn't pay, because I think that club fifth-year option, you have to be paid by the top 10 players at your position. So that's a lot of money for Aldon Smith, for a guy who we don't know if mentally is all together. Just, you know, going off of his past run-ins with the law.
I don't think he's all together. The yelling bomb on a plane, that's elementary schools type stuff. Like, you're like a fifth grader.
Yeah, I think any adult with any common sense knows that you don't go to a TSA and you yell bomb. That's just one of the dumbest things
I've ever heard. I mean, they're petty ass is. They're petty ass is. Like, and you're going to yell bomb? Like, you're an NFL player. I can understand, like, a ninja who's dumb and ignorant to go out and just, you know, say it, you know, just to be funny but for laughs. But you're an NFL player getting paid millions of dollars, and you're yelling out bomb? Like, dude, yeah, you're the same dude that's been caught up with DUIs and stuff. And you're trying to now.
The stabbing at the party at his house, exactly. Shooting of guns and everything like that.
You're trying to, like, leave that. Then you're gonna add another element of immaturity. That's a problem to me.
It is. It's definitely a problem. And San Francisco did the right thing by not picking, in my opinion, by not picking up that option.
They haven't yet. They say it now. But this is the interesting thing. Say he doesn't get suspended, like people think. Maybe he does get suspended for four games. Okay, say he gets suspended for four games, right?
Okay.
And he goes in and has a 15-sack season. Do you think they decline the option?
No.
They pick up the option, right? Pick it up.
Well, I think they have to pick up the option pretty soon, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is it? Oh, maybe. Okay, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't know everything. But I think they have to pick up the option pretty soon, but I think there's a standard date in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
which they have to pick up the option by. So we'll see.
We'll see how it plays out. But anyway, down the pregame, Sean Merriman inks a deal with the WWE.
He can use all the steroids he wants now. No problem.
Is he going to wrestle, though?
Probably. Why wouldn't he?
He's Sean Merriman. No, this is sad. I'm gonna be honest.
Why wouldn't he?
This is sad. This is a sad thing.
Why? They need another Mark Henry in the WWE.
Maybe, but this is sad. This is a guy who had a promising career in the NFL, and he's not old. It's not like he's – I mean, he's still in his mid-30s, if that?
No, I don't even think he's in his mid-30s. I think he
probably just turned like 31 or 32, if
yeah, that. He might – well, no.
Maybe a little younger,
yeah,
right?
He's probably our age.
And now you're to a point where you actually have to stop playing football to be a gimmick. Like, I feel bad. It's the truth, because wrestlers are gimmicks. So you have to stop playing football to be a gimmick. That's sad.
He still makes
more than me. Don't get me wrong. Yeah,
He's hustling for a dollar. There's nothing wrong with that. But like you said, it's kind of his trajectory at one point, because if I'm not mistaken, he was the AP NFL Defensive Player of the Year at one point.
Yeah, he was the most dominant. He was the most dominant pass rusher in football.
That was before the steroids.
Before he got caught with the steroids. Yeah, okay. I'm about to say, because everybody in Maryland, everybody who goes to College Park.
We're not going to speculate.
Oh man, you see the. All right, we don't have to say it. They may have not been caught. But when they first come to College Park, and then when they leave,
it's a totally different beast.
I mean, Vernon Davis hasn't been calling anything. God praise him. When he came to Maryland, though, he wasn't that big, though.
So what are you trying to insinuate?
I'm just saying, Maryland's program.
Their conditioning program is tough. That's all we can leave. We'll just leave it at that.
Will's being nice again. Their conditioning program is tough.
It's tough,
I mean, I've been to their gym. Their gym is nice. I've been to their gym. It's mm-hmm. nice. I've been to their gym when I used to sneak in to play basketball. as you can tell, I'm an illegal ninja. I really am. I do a lot of illegal stuff. Please, I will not tell you what illegal stuff I do. If your officers listen to the show, do not arrest me. We're just saying illegal stuff. But when I used to sneak in to College Park and play ball, there was a nice little hustle we used to do. IDs. Never mind. Don't worry about it. Yeah, we used to hit their gym. We used to hit their gym up. I used to play basketball. Every once in a while, I was sneaking to the weight room, and their weight room facility is nice. This is before Under Armour, before they got, before he started paying them.
Yeah, now with the Under Armour deal, I'm pretty sure it's crazy in there.
It's probably top of the line. All right, moving down to pregame anyway. Greg Popovich wins his third Coach of the Year award.
I personally would have gone with Dwayne Casey in Toronto, just for the simple reason that they traded their leading scorer halfway during the season, and they still go on to win, capture the third seed in the East, even though the East is down relatively in this week. But, he doesn't have a whole lot of talent on that team, mm-hmm. but he has just enough. From where they were last year to this year, it was a tremendous turnaround.
Well, I think Popovich getting it, I mean, he deserves a team with the best record in the league. And, coming off of what happened against Miami last year, you would not naturally think that this team wouldn't. They'd be frustrated. You saw Ginobili last season in the playoffs. He looked old. You thought, Tim Duncan from missing LA, maybe it would have an effect on him for this season. It didn't. Tony Parker still looks like an MVP player. And it happened this season. Tony Parker missed a lot of games. Duncan was still there, but obviously Duncan's always on a particular schedule where he doesn't play every night. You have Manu Ginobili, and then he got players like Patty Mills the ball, what's his name? Tiago Splinter. Yeah, Tiago Splinter, who plays well for him. He lost Kawhi Leonard for a portion of the season. So to me, the moves he did during the season. I can see him definitely deserving to be MVP, honestly, Thibodeau deserves it too. Losing Derrick Rose and having this done, like they weren't a lottery pick for the Bulls at the time. Duncan got drafted by the Spurs when they arrived. All right, Derrick Rose's team connect will probably be up another lottery player. That team traded Luol Deng, and they still were winning games. So Thibodeau deserves credit too as well. But I agree that Casey deserves some. He did a great job with Toronto American head coach. I'm always pro African American to achieve. I love what he did in Toronto. I think he was an assistant with the Dallas Mavericks before he came.
Yeah, he was. He was fired at his at one stop. It might have been.
There was a place before Toronto.
Yeah,
I thought so too.
It wasn't Dallas. It was Minnesota. I think he's always been a hell.
I mean, what he did in Toronto is good work.
Really good work.
I mean, even without they traded Rudy Gay and he doesn't fit my system. You know, they playing Ross and folks, and they still
both. Absolutely. Let's go. Who's just been let go? New York Knicks fired Mike Woodson. Everyone knew that was coming. Mike Woodson knew it was coming. The players at one point stopped playing for Mike Woodson during the season. I believe that Amari Stoudemire said in his exit interview that he didn't believe in offensive. He didn't believe offensive and defensively what they were doing. Woodson's system.
Amari said this?
Amari Stoudemire, yeah.
Fire now.
Yeah, that's what I. Well, he's a guy who counts for, I think, 15% of your cap. So he's getting paid like $20 million.
When is his deal over? Next season?
At the end of next season, yeah.
So then. Because they can lose that for an expiring contract.
Well, or you could use that as bait. You know, teams are always trying to get clear the books. So you know, that's a guy. He's a trade piece if they want to go after someone.
No, yeah, I'm always looking for a player's contract. If they have an expiring contract. If he's got that expiring contract tab, he should definitely. They should definitely look into.
Yeah, but back to Mike Woodson. Mike Woodson, I think he kind of got a raw deal. In New York, you know, he was there for half a season and turned it around, took the Knicks to the playoffs, and they won. They won a game against the Heat, but were blown out in the other four. Then last year, he had probably won a year. Expected the Knicks, they made a lot of adjustments, went with a tube court, a veteran laden team, and he shifted Carmelo Anthony to the power forward position, and also, you know. With Linsanity, found a way to make that work before he left and became a free agent and went to the Houston Rockets. Then this year, I think the downfall of the Knicks team was personnel. For A, I didn't understand the decision to bring in Andrea Bargnani, a guy who's 7 feet.
It could have worked. They never fit him in. They never really fit him in.
Well, his skill set didn't fit what Mike Woodson likes to do. Mike Woodson likes guys that play big men who can play defense. Andrea Bargnani doesn't play defense or rebound.
Woodson is pro defense. I know that. But then again, he played Steve Novak, who used to play well for him.
And did well spots.
And spot duty, yeah.
Yeah, and spot duty, you know.
Because he's more of a D'Antoni guy.
And up the floor for guys like Carmelo to slash and guys for like J.R. Smith to get to the bucket and Raymond Felton. Also, you know, losing guys, you know, they lost a lot from that team previous year. They lost Steve Novak, Chris Copeland, Jason Kidd retired.
Coach of Brooklyn Nets.
Kurt Thomas, Rasheed Wallace. So they lost a lot of veteran leadership. And, you know, if you have – and then you come in and you pay a guy like J.R. Smith and make him one of the higher paid players and you expect him to show you some leadership. Mature.
You lost about that.
And then you also had the Raymond Felton, what he went through during the season.
Dirty. That was just dirty. Not Raymond Felton. I mean, the chick.
That was.
I can go on that topic.
We're going to leave that alone.
We're going to have time, but I can go on that topic.
And then, you know, add on top of that, Phil Jackson comes in. So, you know, he got the shaft. He got the raw end of the stick because everyone knew.
Raw end of the stick? That don't sound right.
He got a bad deal.
There you go. That sounds
once Phil Jackson came in because everyone knew that Phil Jackson was going to bring in a guy who believes in his philosophy of coaching, primarily the triangle offense. But realistically, we've seen, you know, disciples from his coaching tree. You know, become head coaches, but none of them have had a lot of success. So,
speaking of one of his disciples, Steve Kerr, who was a GM, I believe, a GM for the Phoenix Suns, right? Was GM,
yeah,
our GM for the Phoenix Suns, now is a hot commodity. Well, not hot. He's the lead candidate. It's seemingly the lead candidate for the New York Knicks job. Right choice?
Not necessarily, in my opinion. Because you have to look at it like this: Carmelo Anthony is in the last year of his – well, he can option out of his contract. He still has one more year, I think, at like $23.5 million. So what Carmelo Anthony has already said is he's going to option out of his contract. All right, you still have a bloated payroll. So you're going to go to Carmelo Anthony, who's been in the NBA for, I believe, 11 years now, tell him, okay, we're going to start all over with Steve Kerr, a guy who has no coaching experience. He has had experience as a GM in Phoenix with relative success. He's been a NBA analyst for the past couple of years. You're going to say, this is going to be your coach. We're going to build a team around you. We just need you to be patient. If I'm Carmelo Anthony, I've already seen the other three top players in my draft get rings. Those players being LeBron James, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade. I think I may look for a better situation like in Chicago.
Well, no, that's a popular. Well, that's a place that he's been rumored to go to, the Chicago Bulls. If I'm Melo, I mean, I don't like Phil Jackson. I'm not the biggest Phil Jackson fan. But if I'm Melo, I'm telling Phil Jackson, come down and coach. Come down and coach this thing. You've made scores. You've helped scores get to the championship, get to the finals and win a championship, excuse me. You had Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, you know, even Kobe Bryant after Shaq, who was more of a gunner. So now you look at Melo, a guy who, you know, who's a volume shooter. And I'm a big fan of Melo, so I'm not knocking Melo, who's a volume shooter and a scorer. You say, okay, Phil, I mean, put me in the position to win a championship. Put me in a triangle and see what I can do. I mean, Phil, a lot of people think that Melo in a triangle is a dangerous dude anyway. So you put Melo in a triangle with Phil Jackson, and maybe Phil Jackson gets some of his some of his coaches that were on his staff, if they want to come back and coach. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe if I'm Melo, I'm asking Phil Jackson to coach me up and bring in some guys who can who could fit the triangle. I mean, I don't think Raymond Felton would fit the triangle.
Well, they signed Lamar Odom.
I know.
But they signed Lamar
Odom. That's not going to really last, though.
The thing is, you have to find somebody foolish enough to, A, accept the contract of J.R. Smith. B, you need to find...
See, I think J.R. Smith can fit the triangle.
J.R. Smith, he I think he would break... He would try to do his own thing too much if he's not getting his shots or getting his touches.
Put this way, I think for J.R. Smith, if you get a coach with structure, I think that can change. I think it can change. If you give him a coach that said, J.R., you can't do this, that, and the other. And honestly, you know, the same thing applied. I always use this comparison for any player, especially in basketball. When Shaq listened to Phil Jackson because Phil Jackson had multiple rings. So you have to listen to a guy who has multiple rings. Especially J.R. Smith is a young basketball player. So like anything, most people at his age idolize Michael Jordan, right?
Right.
Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson go hand in hand. So if you look up to a guy like Michael Jordan, you see Phil Jackson. You watch Phil Jackson play. He's probably watched Phil Jackson as a coach for like years. He just watching TV and it's like, oh God, like with Phil Jackson, is getting multiple rings. So honestly, off that alone, Phil Jackson's a living legend to a J.R. Smith.
Oh, most of them.
And if you are a living legend, 9 times out of 10, these players will listen to you. You know, it's not like J.R. Smith is like, you know, is up there like Kobe Bryant or all these other players. He's really raw.
But let me cut you off for a second. I understand that he's not up there like Kobe Bryant and all of that.
He's
talented, but he thinks he's up there and he's a knucklehead.
Yeah, that's his problem.
And you know, one thing we both know, if you're a knucklehead, you're just a natural knucklehead. There are few and far people you're gonna listen to.
But would you say Dennis Rodman was a knucklehead?
I said Dennis Rodman was a prima donna.
Yeah, but he would do his own thing. If you look at the Spurs, the Spurs can control him towards the end of his career, end of his career in San Antonio. So they had to ship him. And he was at that point, teams weren't sure if they can control, you know, can control a Dennis Rodman.
You know, wasn't
sure at all.
Obviously, you didn't read the 11 Rings book that I told you about last time I was here.
No,
Phil Jackson actually talked a lot about coaching Dennis Rodman.
He said, we let him do his own thing, though.
Yeah, he let him do his own thing. He just tried to harvest that attention and energy come during game time. And also
I didn't read it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know you didn't. Also, the difference was you had two alpha males on that team, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen.
I think Dennis Rodman would punk Scottie Pippen. He did it in Detroit, but continue.
No, so you had two alpha males who were leaders and were headstrong and could talk to Dennis Rodman and get him to, you know, shape up or ship out.
I didn't see the 30 for 30 Bad Boys, but I do remember Dennis Rodman and company punking Scottie Pippen. I remember that because I don't need to see the 30 for 30. I know this. I watched it. I saw it happen.
Okay. Yeah, that's
I saw
cool.
it happen. You know?
Maybe we could touch on the 30 for 30 a little bit when we talk basketball in the next segment.
All right, but real quick, before commercial break, I had this question on our Facebook page, Solomon Tacky, one of our loyal listeners. I appreciate it, Solomon. Gave me actually a good question. The question was, if you were doing speaking of ESPN, if you were doing a 30 for 30, who or what would you do? Who or what would it be about? So Will had an idea first. I'll let Will go first.
I would do it on the high school to the pros era in the NBA. There are a lot of guys. You know, there's Kobe, there's Tracy McGrady, there's Jermaine O'Neal, Kevin Garnett, guys who were successful. But what about the guys who weren't? You know, what happened to them? You know what I'm saying? And also with them talking about changing the age limit to 20, how will that transcend into today's basketball and potentially hurt the earning potential of, you know, young guys who want to come out, be one and done, and things of that nature. So I would do a 30 for 30 on NBA, the high school to the pros era.
That's a good one. Actually, there's a player who the Dallas Mavericks drafted who kind of like
Leon Powell.
Yeah. He's like spazzed out.
Yeah.
Like he couldn't handle the lifestyle. Before I get into what, you know, what I would pick, on Facebook, our Facebook page, Wayne Thomas said Sean Taylor. I like that one.
That would definitely be a good one.
I should have thought of that one, actually. Thought of another reason.
You should have bet it.
I should have stole that one. I should have said it was my idea and lied. Terrible. My man George Templeton said they need to do one about the guys and the drug problems, like Lynn Bias in the 1986 NBA draft.
I think they did do something on Lynn Bias.
He's talking about players in general, though.
Drug use?
Yeah, in 1986 NBA draft. According to George, there's more than one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's more than one, but I know during the 80s it was cocaine cowboys in the NBA. There were a lot of guys who were on the weed and the white.
Yeah, I like that, George. And one, my man, I know Darod had one too. Darod onto our Twitter page. Darod, what did Darod say? Darod said, let me look at this one. Oh, it's the 17-10 Chicago Bulls. 72-10 Chicago Bulls, excuse me.
I think that story's kind of been.
It's played. I appreciate your input. I could do a 30 for 30 on that one. They played some weak ass competition. 30 for 30 that, son. That's easy.
All right, when we come back from
commercial. Can I get mine
first? Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Go ahead.
You're right. We gotta go on commercial break. Mine was Dexter Manley.
Which was a good one. I told you that was a good one.
It was the career that could have been, the Hall of Fame career that could have been, was for cocaine and crack. And couldn't read.
And illiteracy.
And couldn't read. And real talk, you should be applauded to go that far without reading and without even knowing how to read. He should be applauded. Seriously. He's a hustler. He's the biggest hustler in the world.
If you say so.
Yeah, that's the rally. 30 for 30.
I think that would be compelling and interesting.
In the face!
All right, when we come back from commercial break, we're going to talk NBA basketball, more specifically, Washington's own Wizards.
It's the Urban Sports thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
It's me, Magic Johnson here. I won 5 NBA championships and Olympic gold medal. So I'm calling the shots today. Get up out of bed, into school, try hard, do well. School got me to where I am today. So be there every single day and, of course, give it your best shot.
Aye. Go crazy to this. Go crazy to this. Go crazy to this.
Y'all gonna hit the whole thing. I wasn't gonna do that for y'all. He curses a lot. Throw that back. He curses too much on that. He curses way too much on that. Throw that back. It's a vicious song, though.
Yeah, I love the song.
Throw that back. That album's okay. That B.O.B. album's okay.
As you said, it's okay.
No, I mean, it's good. When I say okay, it's good. I know what you meant by just saying, as you said, okay.
I like the first one better. I like
the first
one.
The first one's way better.
Yeah.
I mean, the first one's, to me, I only use the term classic, but it was a really good album.
Yeah, it had multi-genres of music.
But you don't think this one had multi-genres of music? I feel like, B.O.B. to me is a different cat.
I'm a fan of B.O.B. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of B.O.B. and his music, you know, back in the mixtape days of him. When you have the litmus test is your first album, I think this one, it just fails to live up to that one.
All right. All right, I'll let you go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website at www.waleo.podbeam.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search Urban Sports Scene. If you have any questions or comments, just email us at da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crib Podcast Day nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. Visit www.blogtalkradio.com. Back to see Steeler Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Steeler Fan. All phone lines are open. Feel free to give us a call at 202-595-0904. That's 202-495-0904.
All right. So first, the Washington, we won. They were down 13, took the game. Andre Miller played well. This team, and Nene played well. So Nene hasn't actually, you know, I badmouth Nene a lot this season, if you've been listening to the show. But he gave Noah some go. So do you see the Wizards? Okay, they play tonight, what, 9:30?
9:30.
They play tonight, 9:30, which is odd. You know, that's not a West Coast team. Good Lord, 9:30. TNT, the NBA schedule, playoff schedule is weird sometimes.
No, it's not weird. It's effed up. And the reason they do it is just because for TV ratings. Because you think about it, if it goes to Game 7 isn't going to be until like May 5th. If I'm not mistaken, May 5th. So the playoffs, the first round would be just 2 weeks with all the dates and the leeway, you know, open dates in between each game. And I understand why they try to do it, for the simple fact they play a grueling 82-game season. You know, they jump into the playoffs a week later. You want to be able to give guys opportunity to rest on their, you know, give them a couple days off rest. But give me a break. Come on, man. Do something different. Like,
do something different. Man, give me a break.
Man, every other day, that's how they should be playing. Every other day.
Every other day?
And if they, you know, when it, like, you know, Chicago and the Wizards series is 1-0. Game 2 is tonight. You know, when they go back to D.C., give them 2 days off. But when they're playing just...
I want some old back-to-back nights, man.
I would love that, too.
I think they're doing too much. Like, all these breaks, I mean, it's like you're going away from...
And it stretches the season until the middle of June.
Yeah. I feel like back in the day when we was watching the games, like, you had the back-to-back games where, like, I remember for instance, like when Indiana used to play, when Indiana played the Knicks in the postseason, you know, they had game, you know, say game three, and then there'll be a game, you know, game, then right back on that, you know, Saturday, Sunday's game four, you know, then they'll probably get, you know, obviously you get that travel day, but you got to travel. So it used to be better. It was better than me back then.
It was on NBC. That music, that intro music, it's classic.
I ain't going to lie, man. ESPN needs to get rid of the NBA. They really ruined the NBA. Bill Simmons is horrible. I know you like us horrible.
Why not?
Speak on it. He sucks. His voice is like not basketball. It's not a basketball voice.
Well, I'll say this. He's a very passionate fan, and his passion comes through when in his analysis of the game. But sometimes he's too, especially when it comes to the Boston Celtics.
I know that, but he's passionate. Like, it's just
you hear
like
a squeakiness.
It's like it's so bland. It's like I, and honestly, I know more than Bill Simmons. He probably does know more about it, but when it coming across on TV, I feel like I know more.
Oh, well, I mean, that's interesting. You know what I mean? I'm not going to say I know more than Bill Simmons because, you know, this is a guy who studies basketball.
That's what's up.
24/7.
But he probably couldn't beat me, though. He couldn't beat me one-on-one.
Probably.
I know that.
Probably.
Then he doesn't know that much about basketball. That's what I'm saying.
No, I mean, he probably knows more. You know, he knows about the intricacies because you gotta think about it, he's around basketball guys like Jalen Rose, mm-hmm. Doug Collins, you know, when Magic Johnson used to be in show, Doris Burke, so they can fill him in on the intricacies and things that, you know, because most people when they watch NBA basketball, they only watch the ball. Me, yeah. I like to watch the weak side, watch the guys that are off the ball.
I like to, when I watch basketball, first things first, I like to, when I look at a coach, I want to see the subbing patterns. And I want to see you running plays. 9 times out of 10 in basketball, all is high pick and roll anyway. So it's high. It was high scoring.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean. So that's what basketball is nowadays. Anyway, but anyway, back to the Washington Wizards. Do you think this team will take?
No, I think that.
I'm sorry. What's that? Oh, let me rephrase it. I'm sorry. What will it take for this team to take game two? I'm sorry.
It'll take 48 minutes of how they played that last 6 minutes to come back in the game, which means. Make count on defense. Getting the ball to Nene letting the offense run through him, being physical with Noah like they were last game, pushing him out further than the top of the, you know, then getting on the block or getting in the high post. It also take has to step it up and has to play be more efficient in his scoring, which he wasn't, and kind of the moment was too big for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, your opinion is probably more valid than mine. for me, for the Wizards to take game two is, first off, their defense has to be solid from the onset. Chicago's going to be a desperate team. They do not want to lose two games at home and go into D.C. So defense has to be the focal point off the bat, like rebounding, and you have to match Noah's aggressiveness. Noah will be more aggressive than he was in game one. He's going to hustle more. So Nene, Gortat, you're going to have to box him out even 10 times more. This guy plays off emotion. So that alone will probably get him at a different level. So you're going to have to pay more attention to Noah. Secondly, John Wall and Bradley Beal have to be leaders of this team. They have to be the stars of this series. You're not going to get lucky like you did last game, where Andre Miller, you know, had to be the guy off the bench to spell Wall and outplay Wall. Wall is the leader of this team. For them to dominate the Chicago Bulls, he has to do his thing, and he has to dominate this game. He has to be the best player on the floor. He's the best player for the Washington Wizards. He has to be the best player on the floor. Defensively, Wall was solid. John Wall plays defense. He did a good job playing defense, but he has to be the best player on the floor. Bradley Beal has knockdown shots. I think the stats were something like 7 for combined. They were like 7 for something from the field, 7 for 20 something from the field. This team, these two have to dominate this series. I mean, their backcourt is better than the Bulls' backcourt. Their guard play should be better than the Bulls. And Randy Whitman has to continue to try to outcoach Thibodeau. Now, it's going to be hard. Thibodeau is a great coach, top three in the NBA. So Randy Whitman has to continue to do that. But to me, the focal point is defense. You have to defend. The Bulls are going to bring it on the defense end. The Wizards have to bring it on defense end. And secondly, John Wall. I want to say Bradley Beal, because I think Bradley Beal will be okay. He's a shooter, and shooters have to get a rhythm, and he'll get a rhythm eventually. John Wall just is not a shooter per se, but he's just the best player on the floor. And he has to act like the best player on the floor. And he has to play like the best player on the floor.
Very good. Touche, touche.
See, yeah. And you would think I watched the game, didn't you?
Yeah.
I didn't watch game one.
Will you watch game two?
That's iffy.
All right, let's keep going. If the Wizards can get past the Bulls, can you see them making the Eastern Conference Finals?
You know, I thought about this. When Bill Simmons said this, I was watching it. I actually was watching ESPN. I think it was the Heat game. And he said, yeah, he predicts the Wizards and the Heat will play in the Eastern Conference Final. And at first I thought about, you know, he's just a dumbass. He don't know what he's talking about. That's the first thing that came to my mind, okay. Right? And then when I really broke it down, Indiana lost game one to the Atlanta Hawks.
I think game two is on now. And I don't know the score, but
yeah.
People would be ridiculous to think that Indiana is going to blow two straight games.
No, I don't think that. Atlanta. No, I'm not thinking that at all. But I'm saying, like, Indiana's not Indiana right now. They're not the same Indiana team that we saw in the beginning of the season. If the Wizards can play, if the Wizards knock off Chicago, to me, if going into the postseason, I actually thought that the Bulls can knock off the Pacers. I really thought, you know, cause I expect the Bulls to actually beat the Wizards. I really did. I really do. But it could still happen. I mean, the Wizards could win the series. But if, say, Indiana wins, obviously Indiana, we all predict Indiana to beat the Atlanta Hawks. We do. We know it's going to go down that way.
Okay.
But say they play. They play the Wizards. That's not a given. Roy Hibbert isn't playing at a confident level. You got Gortat and Nene. These guys are physical. David West is a physical guy, but you can match him with two physical individuals. Again, it goes back to the backcourt. You got Stevenson and Hill, Wall and Beal. I like my backcourt. Obviously, Paul George is probably the best player on the floor, but he hasn't been playing that well. After the All-Star break.
People been giving Paul George too much credit.
Paul
George is a star, is the star player of the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah,
he is not a superstar.
No,
player.
I agree. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think Paul George will be a superstar. I love Paul George's game. I think he'll be a superstar, but he's not the level that people want him to make him out to be. I agree with that. But again, the Wizards situation they have an opportunity to beat the Pacers. They can beat the Pacers. Now, we're talking about the Pacers. In the beginning of the season, they have no chance in hell. But the question is, do they have a chance to beat them? Do they have a chance to get to the Eastern Conference Final? I think they really have a legitimate chance to get to the Eastern Conference Final if they get past the Chicago Bulls.
I'm not, you know, even though I'm a Wizards fan, a Wizards and Knicks fan.
You're a Wizards fan?
Yeah, I told you that. I'm a Wizards. I support the home team when it comes to basketball. Man,
that's sad. That's Mitchell Butler, Lito Ackles.
Like I said, I'm a Wizards and Knicks
Michael fan. Adams.
I still, you know, when it comes down to playoff basketball, it's about a couple of things. Defensive intensity, coaching strategy, and matchups. The Wizards don't bring it on every possession. When it comes or defensively, they have they're prone to two or three mental lapses every game. When it comes to coaching strategy and matchup, you got to go with Thibodeau. Thibodeau is a guy who can make adjustments and make arrangements on the fly, in my opinion, better than Randy Whitman. And three, when it comes down to the matchups, I think, you know, even though the Wizards do have better talent, I think Tom Thibodeau has a way of masking deficiencies and putting the talent that he has in the best position to prosper out on the floor.
But the problem with the Bulls is they don't score. And the Wizards can score. If the Wizards play defense, I'm telling you, the Wizards play defense at a high level. And the Wizards are a decent defensive team. If they play good defense, this team, to me, the Bulls, isn't good at – the Bulls aren't good enough to contend with the Wizards offensively.
Right.
So if the Wizards are playing good defense, and not playing there, if they're really focused on focused defensively, and to me, playoff basketball – automatically, regular season don't mean crap. Playoff basketball, even the poorest defenses play better when it comes to playoff basketball because it's everything on the line. All right, okay. And the Wizards have like if you look at their positions, like John Wall was a great defender in Kentucky. He's a good defender in the NBA. Bradley Beal has elements of a good defender, athletic as a guard who likes to rebound, and he can move from side to side. He can slide his feet from side to side. Nene used to be a good defender. Gortat is a guy who hustles. He hustles. And even when you play Trevor Booker off the bench, he's a guy who hustles. And Ariza is a very good defender. Trevor Ariza is a very good defender. So this team has the element to stymie the Chicago Bulls offensively. Speaking of like I said, the Bulls offensively aren't a good team anyway. So the Wizards play adequate defense or good defense. They can shut down the Bulls. Hence the Bulls were up 13. That's why the Wizards came back because the Bulls can't score often.
Yeah, and I understand that, but it's just those lulls in the game when it comes to the Wizards where they'll go like 5 to 7 or 8 minutes and just look like what the hell are you doing?
Offensively or defensively?
Offensively.
But the Bulls go through that too.
The Bulls go through that too, but the Bulls' saving grace is they're tenacious on every defensive possession and can create turnovers, which can lead to outlet passes and easy buckets. So I guess that's one of the things I want to believe, and I hope the Wizards win the series. But if you had to ask me a percentage, I'm still 45-65.
Where were you before? Before game one.
Before game one, mm-hmm. I was 60-40 Bulls.
Because a lot of people now, you know, obviously a lot of fans are now thinking that the Wizards have the series because they took game one. It's premature. It's very premature, to be totally honest with you. I asked this question on Facebook. Let me ask before I post this real quick. So I asked the question on Facebook about, you know, do the Wizards, if I can pull it up real quick. Jesus Christ. Should I say that on air?
Probably not.
Really?
But hey.
Hey, who cares?
It's only like 5 people listening to us.
Nah, man. You keep saying that, man. I don't know what. There's something wrong with you, man. There's a lot of people listening to the show. Hold on. Can the Wizards. Yeah, here you go. No, that's not it. Here you go. Got it. All right. So I posed the question, can the Wizards get to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals? My man David Lee Moses said, yep. There's a bunch of quick answers. Thomas Curl said, yeah. Keith. My man Keith Stover said, yes. Thank you, George. A lengthy answer. George Templeton said, and here's how it happens. Beat the Bulls, upset the Pacers, and the Nets upset the Heat. Actually, rather plausible.
Okay. Well, I mean, anything that was an in-depth response.
Not yes, no, yes, no. It was an in-depth response.
Yeah, and most likely, in all likelihood, just looking at, you know, the landscape and looking at the series that are all the different series, New Jersey will probably beat Toronto in the first round. Then when they
go on, excuse me. I know, man. I be doing the same thing,
yeah,
son.
It happens sometimes.
It happens, man.
I'll just say the Nets. The Nets will beat the Raptors. Then I know everyone's excited because, you know, the Nets swept the Heat in the playoffs. During the regular season. I just don't see that happen.
Don't believe the hype. Because Dwayne Wade will be playing most of these games. Will be playing in all the games, excuse me. LeBron James will be motivated. No.
Udonis Haslem is getting playing time off the bench. James Jones is coming out of nowhere.
Stroking threes.
Exactly. You still got Rashad Lewis. Who knows where Michael Beasley
is. He was hurt last game. He was hurt. And Rashad Lewis sucks. Okay. Yeah. Let me put it out there. Eric Spoelstra, I want to say this one more time. I think you're overrated, coach. I really do. You don't listen to the show, so obviously I can say whatever I want to say. You suck as a head coach. I said it.
Okay.
Overrated.
That's Wally.
You play Rashad Lewis over Michael Beasley, it's hilarious. It's comical. If Rashad Lewis was a better defensive player than Michael Beasley, I would agree. He's not even a good defender. His three ball isn't good anymore. He's not a versatile scorer. Why you put him on the floor amazes me. Flat out amazes me. I would play James Jones over Rashad Lewis. You can continue.
then you have Ray Allen, and you still have Greg Oden and Chris Anderson. You know, so
yeah, Greg Oden should play more too.
Yeah, I don't know why he's not playing. I personally think he should be starting. Start him at the five. Chris Bosh at the four.
Get him going. Yeah. And Chris Bosh, I like you, Chris Bosh, man. I liked you back in the day, in Georgia Tech, in Toronto. Even the first couple years in Miami, but this season, man. Charmin. Too many J's, man. Yeah. Way too many J's.
But anyway, let's talk about the
Do we need to make a prediction yet? Can I make a prediction real quick?
Go ahead.
All right, prediction. Tonight, I think the Bulls win tonight. I do. I think the Bulls win tonight.
I totally agree with you. I think that the Bulls win.
They too much energy. The Bulls going to have way too much energy.
They're going to ratchet up the defense just a notch, and it'll be just enough to get them past the Wizards.
All right.
But let's talk about last night's game. Memphis versus OKC. That was a great game.
Yeah.
A great game.
4-point play by KD.
Yeah, 4-point play by KD. Did you see it?
I just know what a 4-point play by KD.
You spoke with such authority, like you watched the game.
Hey, I didn't watch the game at all, man. Pass my bedtime, man. Pass my bedtime.
Okay, ain't nothing wrong with that, man. There's nothing wrong with that
was
at all.
Actually, no, I wasn't past my bedtime. What was I doing? Oh, my God. That was a Monday. What was I doing?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
No, I go to the gym. I wasn't in my apartment. I was driving around.
Okay. Ain't nothing wrong with
my
that.
My cable's acting up on me, people.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
Hey, nothing wrong with that, brother.
Hard times. Hard times out here, man.
But yeah, this looks like it's going to be a classic slug it out type of series. You know, Memphis, the people call it the grindhouse. They like to go to beat you up.
They call it their style grindhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I use that for my workout. My workout exercise diet or grindhouse.
That's what's up, man.
Grindhouse. I like that. Sound good.
Zach Randolph, one of the best back to the basket big men in the game. Then you also have
he looks like something. I don't know what he looks like to me. Zach Randolph. He looks like a cartoon thing. Like that was on Mario Brothers or something. I don't know. Go ahead, continue.
Then you also have a guy like Marc Gasol, who's a fantastic passer from the high post. One thing that concerns me about them, much like Chicago, they don't have a lot of offense outside of those two. You know, Mike Conley's one of those underrated point guards, can get to the basket whenever he needs
to. Mike Conley is an amazing point guard. He gets no respect, but he is a very top flight point. He's a top flight point guard.
Yeah, he's developed into a very good point guard. He can get to the basket, knock down the open
three. Actually, if you look at his playoff, his playoff record, he's been going against good point guards. You know, he's going against, in the West, you go against great point guards all the time. But when he went against Chris Paul,
he held his own.
Like he's actually a really. I'm surprised. I mean, it's so hard to make the All-Star team in the Western Conference as a point guard. He deserves it though. Sooner or later, he deserves it.
Yeah, he'll get his just due one day. But
sorry. Go ahead.
No, no problem. Outside of those three, you don't have any guys who can create a shot for themselves. Tony Allen, a standout defensive player. Tayshaun Prince isn't half of what he used to be anymore. Then after that, it really drops off when they go to the bench. So it's going to be a tough series for OKC, just for the fact that Memphis is going to make it really as ugly as possible. But, you know, I still think OKC takes this one, pulls this one out probably 4-2, 4-1.
Are they take the rest? Oh, it's not going to be 4-1. I think it's a 7-game series. 4-2 or 7. I think, to be honest with you, this is the worst team that, I mean, it's going to probably be the toughest team that OKC has to play other than, obviously, the Spurs or the.
They got too much athleticism.
For I know, the Spurs. But it's going to be the toughest team. I mean, the Spurs are well coached. The Spurs, between the Spurs.
True.
And the Miami Heat, if they play the, you know, play Miami Heat. This team, this Memphis team just plays, truth be told, plays early 90s, mid 80s basketball. And they beat you up. They go for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they shut down the lane whenever you try to drive.
Exactly. This is what playoff basketball is supposed to be. This is you talked about the Bad Boys. I mean, they're not as obviously as mean as the Bad Boys, but they're physical. And you know, when in today's NBA, to be honest with you, most teams are soft. It's the truth. I'm not lying to you. This is something, if you watch basketball, you can tell these teams are soft. Compare these teams to teams if you watch in my age, watch the New York Knicks Wills team that Will used to watch growing up, the New York Knicks, or the Detroit Pistons, or even, I can't think of a couple of teams. The Boston Celtics were pretty tough, too.
Boston Celtics had the late 80s. They were nasty.
McHale. You know, and even the Showtime Lakers were nasty, even, you know, for a team that liked to score a lot. And they were finesse. So if you really want to be real with it, these teams are soft. The Memphis Grizzlies take on that characteristic of a team that's of a tough team, a team in the mid-80s, a team that would beat you up. And most of these, to be honest with you, most of these – most of today's basketball, today's star players aren't used to getting beat up. They're just not. They used to be given everything. Like, I love Kevin Durant, but you know, Memphis roughs him up. Yeah. I like Westbrook is tough, but they rough him up.
Yeah, it's going to be a physically taxing series for Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook as they try to get to the bucket. Because anyone who saw the game last night knows that there were no easy shots when they came into the lane. There were like two or three bodies around them. And they were putting a body on them to try to put them on the floor.
But again, I'm with you to the point where I think that it's OKC series to take. I believe they played last year, right?
They played last year.
Last year they lost because Russell Westbrook was out. I think this time with Russell, no, yeah, right, right. They lost, right?
Yeah, they lost last year.
All right, well, this time with Russell Westbrook being back, I think he's the key. Russell Westbrook's the key to me.
Not only Russell Westbrook, but the pups have grown up. You know, guys like Lamb.
Don't play Lamb like that. We playing Caron Butler over Lamb. They play him last game. They play him a little bit. He used to get minutes. He used to get big minutes until Caron got there. Now he don't get the minutes.
And then you got to think about the addition of Caron Butler as a sixth man. That's offense right there.
He's taking Lamb's minutes. Lamb is a better player than Caron Butler right now. Caron Butler's a great defensive player. He's a better defensive player than Jeremy Lamb, but he's not a better offensive player than Jeremy Lamb. Jeremy Lamb should be the sixth man on the team. And they still play Perry Jones Jr., right? Perry Jones the third.
I don't think he played a lot during last night's game, but I was kind of in and out of that game.
Yeah, exactly.
In anticipation for Boondocks.
Yeah, I watched it today.
That was the weakest season opening they've had in the four seasons. Aaron Magruder, please come back.
It was weak, but I still loved it. God, I missed it.
I think next
Wednesday show is gonna be like that though.
Yeah, I think we'll next Wednesday show is going to be like that. You know, that's
Aaron Chris Brown. That was supposed to be Chris Brown?
Yeah, that was supposed to be Chris Brown.
It was dumb.
That's so outdated, so outplayed, because that's like.
It's not as out. It was. I was laughing in the office. I watched it, you know, at work, because my cable was giving me issues. but it had me rolling. But I think for me, I enjoyed it because I was like, dang, it's going to take forever. It took forever to come back. Like, how many years was it? Like two? Like two?
Four, nah, like three. I want to say three.
Yeah, like three. Come on. That's too much. Time.
And that's one of that. To
Regina
me,
King still
of,
writes, right? She's still doing the voices, though, right?
She's still doing the voices. I don't know. I just know Aaron Magruder is no longer part of it. And, you know, that was his heart and soul. That was his baby. So I'm kind of skeptical to see how the season plays out.
Man.
But let's get back to basketball, specifically Clippers and Golden State last night. There really isn't a lot to talk about.
I don't need to talk about last night game. It sucked.
Yeah,
I mean, that wasn't a game.
Golden State, they took game one
That's the game to talk about. Game one was great.
Yeah, but last night, the Clippers, as I predicted with Doc Rivers, they came out to send a statement to Golden State Warriors. Blake Griffin had, I believe it was 35 points in 32 minutes.
It's career high.
Yeah. 35 points in 32 minutes. DeAndre Jordan was a beast on the boards.
He's had a phenomenal two games. Really has.
Chris Paul was the leader, was the general, kept the offense going. Offensively, he also was there. Defensively, then, you know, when they go to the bench, they have Turkoglu, Danny Granger.
They got
a lot of older veterans, some guys who know how to win games for them. If put in a spot to support, who know their role can win a game. If you go down with an injury, you can win a game or two with them in the lineup.
For me, I think the Warriors were just happy to take game one, and that's why they came out so flat. You could tell when a team doesn't. I mean, this team to me shouldn't have gotten beaten that bad by the Clippers. I don't care if Blake Griffin was playing at a high level. Obviously, they were happy to take that game one, you know, and they think they could take over the series at home. It's going to be a different beast at home because obviously the Warriors play tough. They play better at home, but the Clippers ain't no slouch. This is a team that could score two as well. I agree to a point where you're referring to some of, you know, what the Clippers bring to the table with the bench. I mean, to me, Danny Granger hasn't been Danny Granger since the injury. So I don't know how much of a impact player he is. I mean, you have Barnes, you have
Darren Collison.
I like Darren Collison. I think Darren Collison does a decent job on Stephen Curry too. I think he does a really good job.
Yeah, because he has very long arms.
And he's quick.
He can get around those screens. Yeah. You know, when Stephen Curry tries to use that jab step, he can put his arms out there and try to deter that, knock the ball away.
No, so I do, but I think, you know, the you could tell that the Warriors did what they wanted to do. They wanted to take one. They didn't want to take two. They didn't want to be greedy. You know, you hear the terms, let's get greedy. You could tell that. To me, that's a dominant team. A team that wants to get greedy is a dominant team. So they were just happy to take game one from the Clippers, knowing they have a true home court advantage. You know, some courts you can go play over them. You think you can win any game. Like, you go to Staples, you think you can win.
Right.
You know, the fans they're not imposing. You go to Golden State, you go to the Oracle. You go to Oracle.
Down in the Bay.
Yeah, you go down the Bay, two show. You know, you go down there, it's a whole different beast. You know what I mean? That crowd is more like a college experience. So I think they were just happy to take one. And that's why they came out flat in game two. Now, I'd be surprised if Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, them boys, don't have a lights out experience in terms of how they shoot the ball.
Yeah, it'll be. This is one of those series that I think is going to go at least six, but definitely six, possibly seven.
It's too entertaining, man. The NBA's going to try to make it. They're going to try to make it go seven.
Yeah, they will. This is one of the more entertaining series. I think throughout the West, it's really tough. Really, a lot of tough matchups.
I like this one because they don't like each other. That's what makes it so cool.
Yeah, all of the trash talking leading up to it with Klay Thompson saying that
Blake Griffin flops, and he's soft.
Yeah, and then JJ Redick coming to Blake Griffin's defense. I never see Blake Griffin stand up for
him. He never does. But what did J.J. Redick say? I didn't hear his part.
He said something about...
I like J.J.
I like J.J. He has a lot of guts. He's really really tough guy.
Yeah, he's not soft. He's not a soft dookie. He's actually a tough dude.
He's actually developed into a really good pro.
Yeah, he is. He has.
Because when he came into the league, he was just a guy you would think would run off of picks to try to shoot threes. But he's actually a guy who can do a little more on the floor.
He can do more.
And actually has become a above average defender.
Oh yeah, I like JJ Redick because he took his craft very seriously.
Yeah, that's and how I respect that. The guy respect who does that.
Exactly. All right, let's go into tonight's games. Nets versus Raptors.
Well, let's talk about
something else.
Yeah, Indiana is Atlanta is up 3 on Indiana right now.
Okay, Atlanta's up right now on Indiana.
58-55, 9 minutes and 36 seconds left.
Let's talk about that game. Atlanta is up.
Indiana's keeping it close, which I think could possibly play to their advantage.
They're at home. It shouldn't be kept close. It should be blown. If it was on the road, yeah, I agree. Indiana's keeping it close. Sounds okay. They're at home.
Just for their mental state now, the way they're very mentally fragile. You got the coach You know, you got people talking about losing his job. Larry Bird coming down and taking over, which I definitely see happen at the end of this season, unless he gets to the NBA Finals. Then you have the unraveling of the team after the Danny Granger trade. They aren't gelling offensively. Lance Stevenson, for all intents and purposes, kind of seems not there.
Spaced out. He's competing with Evan Turner.
Yeah, because he's competing for his contract. That's all he wants.
Yeah, he's competing with Evan Turner. You got a guy, you know, Evan Turner's the opposite. He's the opposite player of Lance Stevenson. So he's competing with Evan Turner.
Yeah, and Lance Stevenson is a guy who plays off of emotion. Mm-hmm. He plays off of emotion and pride. And then, you know, you have Paul George, a guy, a player who everyone anointed as one of the next superstars, who's in reality, he's just a star. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's not good. I'm not saying that I wouldn't want him on my team. But in reality, he's a star player who can ascend to being a superstar player. So this one looks like it's going to be tight. Can't wait to after the show to catch it and see how it's going. But yeah.
But I'll say this. You lose 2-0. You losing 2-0. You lose both games at home. For this team, this Pacers team who's fragile already. This is what I was telling folks about the Pacers. Home court advantage meant everything to them. Like, seriously. If they had gotten the 2 seed, there is no way they would win the championship because they wouldn't even believe they could beat Miami. That's how bad it is. Now, like, they're struggling against Atlanta, a team. It goes back to their mental state of mind. Atlanta has played them tough in the regular season, and they are aware of it. And instead of being a team that's confident and to know that they're better than Atlanta, and that stuff was fluke in the regular season, they're playing on to that, oh, Atlanta, they match up well against this thing. And now, you know, obviously, Atlanta plays a faster pace. Now, Roy Hibbert is pretty much not as, you know, he's not a strong player for them in this series because they run a fast pace, and it's hard for Roy Hibbert to play a Paul Millsap who's shooting threes and stretching the court.
Yeah, that's what I was going to also say. You have Michael Scott, Paul Millsap, and I forgot the other.
Oh, yeah, Michael Scott from VA, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, I can't pronounce the other guy who almost got into the fight with David West on the first game. Oh, Ballhead guy.
I forgot. I know you're talking about David West. Don't mess with David West.
All three of those guys can shoot threes.
Don't mess with David West.
And you know, with Roy Hibbert having to be in the lane to protect the basket, mm-hmm. he doesn't have the foot speed to close out.
Not at all.
And if he does begin to start to close out, give him a pump fake, go right past him.
So it's a bad series for Roy Hibbert. Now, actually, you know, Vogel has a tough decision. He may have to sit Roy Hibbert just because, you know, this team is perimeter-oriented. Unless you're going to feed Roy Hibbert all the time, which you're not doing, there's really no use for Roy Hibbert in this series.
Yeah. Now to the second game that's going on, Toronto at Brooklyn. Toronto was up 45-39 with 10 seconds left in the second quarter. Just brain freeze. Toronto starting to step it up. You know, we know the athleticism and the all-star guards they have in Lowry and also DeRozan. Dwayne Casey, he's a guy who plays a really good, strict defensive philosophy. As I said, you know, just because of the age of this Brooklyn team and, you know, the inconsistency sometimes with their star player and Deron Williams and also the second guy who they're going to rely on a lot, Joe Johnson. If Joe Johnson doesn't average 22 points a game for this team, they're not going far in the playoffs, which I don't see happening. But fortunately, they have a guy like Paul Pierce who can pick it up.
Like you heard me say in that game when he hit that bucket?
This
the reason why they brought me here. That's real.
That's real. That's confidence. Man. That's real. But, you know, I still think that the Nets have a very good chance. I actually do think they'll knock off Toronto. So this one's pretty close going into halftime. We'll see.
Score the game?
45-39, if I'm not mistaken.
45-39, who's up?
Toronto.
Yeah, I think Toronto wins this game.
Yeah, I think Toronto pulls it even Then when they go back to Brooklyn, I think Brooklyn sweeps them.
You think so? I think this series goes, in my opinion, I think this series goes 6-7.
I think it goes a 6, definitely.
I think Toronto has talent enough where, I think, if you watch the first game in the beginning, Toronto was nervous. You could tell that they were or the emotions were high. They couldn't calm down. And as the game went on, they got comfortable, but it was too late by that time. Brooklyn, Brooklyn showed who they were. They'll take this game. Brooklyn will take game three. Game four, I believe Toronto will take. I think it's going seven. The series is going seven. I can say it. The series is going seven.
I think the Nets in six.
All right.
If you ask me.
All right. But real quick on Toronto, I want to say, like, DeRozan has to step up, though. That's the guy who needs to step up.
DeRozan needs to really step up to the basket.
Yeah.
He needs to get to the
basket. Lowry's going to be fine because Lowry, to be honest with you, he's dealt with playoff basketball and with Houston. So Lowry will be fine. You know what I mean? DeRozan's going to need to step up, though. Okay. Definitely need to step up.
All right. Let's give a quick prediction of Wednesday's games.
All right. It's Mavs, Spurs.
Spurs, easily.
Yeah. The Mavs messed up in game one. They should have won that game.
They had the opportunity. They blew it. They had the opportunity to go up 1-0 and, actually be at the table for this series.
Yes, but Spurs. I'm with you. Spurs.
Yeah, I'm going Spurs. Probably the best series out of all the playoff series, Blazers versus Rockets.
Yeah, Rockets. I got to go to Rockets. Aldridge went for 46, though.
He went for 46.
The man.
Yeah, he's the man. And Damian Lillard went for like 31.
31, yeah.
During the halftime of the first game, Shaq made a very,
astute point?
Not astute? Yeah, astute point.
Mm-hmm.
With Robin Lopez on him, there's no way Dwight Howard shouldn't be averaging 28 and 15.
I think he had 27, though.
In OT.
That's Shaq said too, right? Yeah. Shaq probably said that too. Shaq hates on Dwight so hard.
Yeah, he hates on Dwight so hard. And Charles Barkley was like, told him, you think that he's not Shaquille O'Neal. He's not the most dominant big man, the second most dominant big man to play in the last 50 years. Which he did have a point, but to this point in his Dwight Howard's career, he just doesn't seem to me like a guy who's going to give you 28 and 15 because he's limited offensively.
Yeah, not consistently. Don't get me wrong. He's improved with some of his moves under Mikal and Olajuwon. He's improved, but there's more he needs to do to get to that.
Yeah, like that running hook is terrible. He needs to develop a sky hook, but that running hook is terrible.
His left hand hook is good though.
Yeah, he has above average left hand hook.
Yeah, he does. I like his left hand hook.
But yeah, Dwight Howard is one of the guys. If you knock him off the block,
he needs a nice pivot move. Like that's what he needs. He needs like how Olajuwon had the pivot, had the shimmy for the fade.
Patrick Ewing had the fadeaway.
He needs a nice pivot move. Like it can't always be
duck your shoulder in and try to go.
He needs to set his people up. If you're gonna be a power player, it's either that you back him down early, that way you don't have to do that much work. And that also relies on the entry pass too. It's not just him. Some of the entry passes too have to improve.
And another thing I've seen in this game, I don't remember an elite big man who wasn't a good passer from the post when a double team came.
He's an okay passer.
He's average.
Well, it's funny because to me with the Orlando Magic, he was actually a good passer. The finest 3-point shooters.
Well, yeah, that's because they spaced.
It could be schematics too.
It's schematics, and he's just a below average passer out of the post when a double team comes. He isn't able to recognize when the double team's coming from and beat the double team with a pass.
He's not a Marc Gasol or a Pau Gasol. He's not that kind of player.
He's not even Shaq. Shaq.
Oh, Shaq was a great passer.
Shaq was a great passer. Shaq, Olajuwon, David Robinson,
Patrick Ewing. He's okay passer.
David Robinson was a good passer out of the double. He was a good passer out of the double. He made the right decision with the ball when the double came. When he saw the double coming, he was able to get the ball out and make the right decision.
Pat was an okay passer. I like Pat. It wasn't special though. Pat was an okay passer.
Pat was an average passer, and I think to be a dominant or want to be considered one of the great big men, you have to be a decent passer out of the post or out of the high post.
Yeah.
Which he hasn't. There's just so many offensive deficiencies in this game to this point. But, he's the franchise in Houston.
No, Harden's the franchise.
He thinks he's the franchise.
Well, he lost that one. The beard sells alone.
last one, Bobcats Heat.
Oh, yeah. It's a Heat.
Yeah, same here. Heat.
It's a Heat. But Bobcats showed some fight in game one, though. I got to give him credit. They showed some fight.
But Al Jefferson is day to day.
If Al Jefferson didn't get hurt in that game, it could have been different. I won't say that he would have lost, but it could have been tougher.
True,
it really could have.
Al Jefferson is the key for the Charlotte for the
easily, yeah. Easily. They don't need Kemba Walker trying to take over the show. They're going to need to calm down Kemba Walker. If Al Jefferson does play, they need to calm him down. It's the same that when people complain about Russell Westbrook about Kevin Durant. Same thing's going to apply in this series with Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker looks like he's trying to be UConn. You ain't UConn.
You don't need that.
Al Jefferson could dominate. He can, if you watch me in a game, he could really dominate
against the Miami Heat. He could dominate.
I mean, I'm talking about 35 and 15 plus. Almost every night.
He can get you what Shaq was calling for Dwight Howard at 28 and 15.
Yeah, easily.
With no problems. Mm-hmm. All right, we're about to head to commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking Nats and O's in the last segment.
It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't, because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
I believe every lie that I ever told, paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold.
Well, all right, the Urban Sports, and we're back. And you want to call in, you have the right to do so. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-409.
All right, now baseball, and we're talking DMV baseball. We're talking about the Nats.
Yeah, can we get in there?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Also benched for not running it out. I believe it was against the Cardinals. Against the Cardinals was the manager of the Washington Nationals.
I'm not going to pretend to be really just gotten into what. Well, I've never understood if it's a clear out, the ball in the first baseman's glove. Why do I have to hustle it out? What? Why can't I conserve my energy?
Because you never know.
But if it's all out,
yeah.
Why I run all the way and hustle it out and expend useless energy?
Well, I mean, the problem with situation, I'm actually, truth be told, I'm not mad at Bryce Harper. He had a sore quad. Why even? And everybody, and the funny thing about the whole Bryce Harper situation, people complain and say, okay, well, Bryce Harper needs to calm down. He's running everything out. His body's going to break down if he keeps playing that reckless level. Well, this time he showed caution. Like, he decided, okay, there's a ground ball. Rice, boom, boom. There's no need to run it out. I'm not going to agree with Bryce Harper to what you're talking about, though. It's in baseball. In baseball, it's just a thing that's
based on tradition and doesn't want to move forward and innovate.
Yeah, but I'm not going to argue. All right. But you're supposed to run everything out. Say that, you know, for instance, that ground ball happened. It's supposed to be a bang. The pitcher throws the ball away, or games where a guy didn't run it out and the pitcher threw the ball away, or ball and it rolls away. But since the first baseman had the opportunity to field the ball and tag first.
Well,
I've seen that happen.
I'm talking about when it's one of those bang bang plays.
That's like, that was a bang bang play too. I mean, Bryce Harper was off when that play was our argument. He was already running off when the pitcher.
I didn't actually see the play.
Yeah, so the pitcher. What happened was it was an easy. Right? That's a 99%. You know, 99% out. You know what I mean? Truth be told, it should be 100%, to be honest with you. So Bryce Harper hit it to he veered to the side. He ran. As he saw the pitcher throwing it to first, he reared to the side and, like, basically walked off. Okay. He didn't run it out. But, again, I'm not mad at him because he had a sore quad. He's playing hurt. The whole DMV or, you know, the media in this market, sports media in this market, have been saying Bryce has to, like, tone it down a little bit.
I think the national media.
Yeah, national media. Yeah, he has to tone it down a little bit so he won't get hurt. So he did. That's an out. He was going to be out. He was out anyway. So should Matt Williams have benched him for that? I don't think so. I think it was kind of stupid to bench him. I think Matt Williams is doing way too much with this team. You have Matt Williams, like for instance, he changed. Bryce Harper doesn't even have a set lineup, a set position in the lineup. A day he'll hit two, he may hit six, he may hit seven. I mean, Bryce Harper is supposed to be a cornerstone of your team.
A linchpin.
Exactly. He should have a place in the lineup where you say, okay, Bryce Harper is hitting. That's my problem.
I think the perception of this team under Davey Johnson was they were kind of, you know, even at, you know, spring training, people were referring to it as Club Med, you know, because guys kind of came and went as they wanted. This year, Matt Williams had more structure, kind of more discipline to it. So, you know, if that's his motto, if that's what he's going to hang his hat on, then you got to do it, even if it's a star player. Do I think people are overreacting? Yeah. You know, this is the age of social media, ESPN, where people try to make a story out of anything. So, you know, what was ironic was, you know, when they were at the bottom of the ninth and in his spot, you know, he had an opportunity to come and win the game for him had he been in the lineup. But, you know, we'll never know what happens because he was taken out by Matt Williams. But
I'm all about winning games, man. I'm not about teaching.
I'm not going to harm myself and my team.
Why impact the team for something that, if it was something totally serious, I understand. All right, I understand. But why impact the?
Yeah. Chew his ass, closed doors in the clubhouse.
If you want to be honest with you, if you really want to, bench him the next game. But don't bench him that game. During that game, all right. Bench him the next game. If you really want to,
because then it becomes a huge story.
Yeah, exactly.
If you bench him the next game,
it's like, all right, he's out of lineup. Maybe he's gonna rest. Who knows?
Exactly. And then even when they come to the manager or come to Bryce Harper, they could play it down in the media if they want.
Exactly.
But, you know, to pull him out right then and there and really hurt the team's chances when this team has gotten off, let's be frank, to a bumpy start. You know what I mean? They've gotten off to not the start a lot of people predicted them to get.
I mean, this team's been losing to good teams and beating all the bad teams.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happened.
And, you know, Matt Williams right now is – to me, it's just as similar as Davey Johnson. I mean, the outcome of games, I don't see anything different. They still struggle against the Braves. The Cardinals still beat them.
I think they're last in the major league. I mean, first in the major league with errors.
Yeah. So
his use of them hasn't been,
which is regular for a new manager, a guy who hasn't managed before. The bullpen is pretty hard to really regulate and work out. You gotta have a feel of guys you trust and have it set up the way you want it set up. But, you know, I mean, I have faith in Matt Williams. I mean, from what I've read about Matt Williams and what other baseball players have said about Matt Williams, and I watched Matt Williams play for the Giants as a kid, and I saw him play with the Expos too. Matt Williams was a good third baseman, a guy who hit for power, and he was a gritty player. So I think, you know, being a star – I mean, as a baseball player at a time, he was a star third baseman at a time, would be conducive to this team as a manager.
Let me ask you this. You just described his personality as a player. Do you think he's trying to impart that personality on his team? Because if you think about it, in the clubhouse, they don't really – the guy who you would think is the leader, Jason Worth, is kind of
– Yeah, you know what? To me, Bryce Harper Williams, just because – because Brad plays hard 24-7. He's played hard 24-7. Like, you know, if it was a play, if he was going first to second – if on a double play attempt, he would take out that second baseman. He would take out that second baseman or shortstop. Well, that shortstop, he'll take out that shortstop or second baseman. So he was that kind of guy that would do whatever it took, you know, to make a play for his team. And he, like I said, he was a decent third baseman. He made plays. So I don't this whole Bryce Harper thing. It's interesting to me because, like, Bryce Harper is very comparable to Matt Williams. I don't know why he took it out on him, but I do think he's trying to bring – he's imposing his will on this team. I definitely see it. He's imposing his will on this team.
Okay. As we know, currently the Nats are playing the Angels, and this is probably one of the more hyped matchups now nationally because you have Bryce Harper versus
– Mike Trout.
Mike Trout. Awesome Trout, who's done – in his first 2 years has done things that only realistically –
like Junior Griffey.
Junior Griffey, well, I think it was Mickey Mantle and Babe Ruth have only done, if I'm not mistaken. I could be. Like I said, I'm not a baseball aficionado.
It's okay. I love baseball, but I don't know the.
his stats that he's put up the first his first two years. Do you think Bryce Harper, even though there's been a lot of, you know, the hype is there, has he ascended, has his play on the field ascended to the level of Mike Trout's?
No, he hasn't. I know Ray's probably, if Ray's listening to the show, he'd be like, why you hate on Mike Trout? I mean, hate on Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper, he's not even the best player on his team. So he can't be on the level of Mike Trout.
Well, I'll say this. I think Bryce Harper's 20 years old. I think he's doing things that most 20-year-olds in the majors able to do. I'll say that.
Like what? That he's excelled. Like, there's 20-year-old. A-Rod was an awesome 20-year-old baseball player.
The injuries, I think, have taken away his ability from what he's
62 games in the season.
Right.
I'm not even asking for a whole 162 games. Kyle Ripken is one of the only individuals who can do that. I'm only asking for, you know, give me 400 at-bats. Do something with 400 at-bats. You haven't done enough with 400 at-bats. That's all I'm saying. Bryce Harper is at a point where when I'm looking at him, I'm like, yeah, he's a good ball player, but is he better than Adam Jones? Can't say that. Is he better than a Mike Trout? Can't say that. I'm trying to think of another star center field. So is he better than, in Pittsburgh?
McCutcheon?
McCutcheon. He ain't better than McCutcheon?
No.
So, I mean.
But he's only 20 years old. But he's still not, a baby.
He is a baby, but again, you try me. So Bryce Harper, think of what?
Star.
You think of a star. He's not better than Ian Desmond. He's not better than, who else? Not better than Jason Worth. He's not better than, who else I say on the team? Was it Rick Doan?
Anthony Rendon.
Yeah, Rendon is better than Bryce Harper.
Rendon looks like he could be a type of guy Rendon that can. He looks like he can contend for.
Exactly. So I mean, I'm adding the pitchers, not better than Zimmerman. Maybe better than Strasburg. Strasburg's a little overrated right now to me.
It's funny.
And Gio, maybe.
Speaking on Strasburg, and I'm not going to deviate too much from the outline, but him and Harper, the two guys with the most hype that's come out in the last 10 years, haven't been able to consistently do it.
All right, like I said, when I was on this show like a week, 2 weeks ago, it didn't get posted due to a recording issue. I had my man Jewel from on Twitter who spoke talk for me, and we talked about how I talked to Strasburg. Has it panned out? I thought Strasburg would be dominant. I thought Strasburg would be as good as Clayton Kershaw. He should be that dominant. And to be honest with you, this pitcher on his team right now.
To be honest with you, it's kind of turn in the game until the Strasburg
is pitching. And that's when he settles down. And as an ace, though, those moments, because he's an ace against the Shaws or the Adam Wayne, play against those guys. And those guys are shutting you down. One, two, inning three, inning four. Maybe now you start hitting them in inning five and six. But if straight giving up big, like three-run leads, putting pressure on that offense to score on a dominant pitcher. And that is too hard. That is too hard.
I hear you, bro.
You know what I mean? So Strasburg has to step up. Plain simple. But see much. Okay, that's what. So do you, for Harper, is the, the Ponder kid. Are folks putting too much on his plate?
No, he's pretty in everything pretty well. I'm not going to say mistake. Excuse me as an excuse. I think he's handling everything well. You know, he's been, you got to remember, he was a child when it comes to baseball, you know. His parents decided to take him out of high school and play JUCO ball, you know, hype, you know, being able to hit a home run like yards. When he was like 500 feet.
Okay, I got you. I got you, man.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, I got you.
Like a 17 or 16, something like that. Mm-hmm. So he's used to the limelight, producing at the level that we thought he would be. I don't know. Maybe it's, adjustments to this area. Maybe, you know, this, as I always stated, this is the area where athletes' career come to die.
This dude dirty. I'll say this. I do think Trout will have a very good season this season. I mean, Trout. So let's keep going, Trout. Bryce Harper will have a very good season this season.
I hope he does.
He has in him. I'm not going to lie to you. He has in him. I expect him to have a streak where people are like, "Wow, okay, now this is the Bryce Harper we thought we would get." And he'll have a full season. I don't believe he'll get hurt. I'm seeing 25, 30 home runs. and a guy who can now put his true impact on this Washington Nationals team, which they need. If they want to make a big run to be this World Series contender, Bryce Harper has to reach his destiny, which is to be a top-tier baseball player in this game.
Yeah, but let's drive up 295. Wally hates this statement.
I hate that statement.
Let's drive up to 295,
my man,
to Baltimore and talk about your Baltimore Orioles.
You know, I always got it.
Yeah, Chris Tillman, he's off to a 2-1.71. Is he the ace of the staff?
Well, it's not that he's an ace of the staff. He's definitely the ace of the staff.
That's a great question.
Yeah. I think, to me, in my opinion, he's a legitimate ace. Two of the games he's pitched, other than the Boston game, he did win. He did get a W against the Boston, against the Red Sox. His first game against the Red Sox, he shut him down. He didn't pitch his best. He didn't have his best outing. But he did his job. He did his job and got the – did he get the W? I think he got the W his first game. And then against the Toronto Blue Jays, he didn't give up an earned run, but he got the loss. But he dominated that game. Probably one of the best pitch games I've ever seen him pitch. Then go against the Red Sox. He didn't have his best stuff, but still got a W against the Red Sox, 2-1. So Tilly, to me, is an ace of this team. We're going off of last season. He started the season like 13-3 last year. So Tillman has been an ace. It's been a discussion. Should the Orioles have brought in a veteran pitcher to be the ace of this ball club? This guy has been the flat-out best pitcher on this team. They signed Yoelito Jimenez to a 4-year, $50 million contract. Tillman is way better than him.
And then you also have Santana.
Johan Santana who's in the minors. But, again, Johan probably won't be up on his team probably till June. And if he is, somebody has to pitch poorly for him to get called up. But Tillman has been the ace of this ball club, hands down. And I've been very impressed with him.
Okay. Well, let's talk about another player who's been impressive, Jonathan Schoop. He's played well offensively, but has struggled defensively. Should Buck continue to go with him at third, or should he think of just playing him at second?
I think Buck should play him at second. That's his natural position. Third base, he's had a couple costly errors. I mentioned that Toronto game. In the Toronto game, the reason why the Orioles lost that game and Tillman lost that game is that Jonathan Schoop had two errors in that game for them to score both of their runs. So he may need to go back to his natural position, move Ryan Flaherty to third base till Manny Machado gets back to play third base. So I think, in my opinion, he should always play second base. That's his natural position. That's the position he'll play for the Orioles in the future. So might as well have him at second base and be like the big second baseman. I mean, he hits for power. You can see eventually he'll be a 30 home run guy as he gets older. He has that kind of strength. He's already hitting home runs right now. He has a nice swing. He has, and you could tell when he makes these errors. He's made a couple errors in games. It's bothering him mentally at the plate too, because now he's trying to get it back. He's at a point where I gave him a run because of my error. Now I need to hit a home run to even it out. So he's at that point right now.
Okay. Well, that's kind of
that's about the end of the show.
Before we end the show,
go ahead.
I want to take this opportunity to wish a happy birthday to a near dear friend of mine.
Go ahead.
My man to my right.
Oh,
Wally.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
I want to wish you a happy birthday. Your birthday's tomorrow.
Yes.
We'll probably meet up, drink, or
we'll probably do that. It's a given. We'll probably do that. That's a given.
Once again, you've been a great friend. Been great holding the show down when I'm not here, and coming up with creative outlines and doing your thing on social media to market the show. So I just want to take this opportunity to wish you a happy birthday, man.
I appreciate it, man. Much love, man. I love you, man. Appreciate it.
No problem, man.
First off, I want to give a shout out to again. I know it's redundant, but shout out to West Coast Dilla fan and Joe.
Heron.
Joe, I know you by Joe, man. I don't know about your government, but Joe Heron, I want to give y'all give them some respect and some compliments and much love for definitely giving us press credentials. Will press credentials so he can see the fight and helping us get contact with a boxing individual. That's something totally new to. We're appreciative of the whole thing, of the whole situation.
Yeah. Once again, I want to thank you guys. For a huge boxing geek, boxing junkie like myself, that was a be able to sit a press row and watch the fight, just analyze it. It was a great, I'm not gonna say a great moment, but it was a happy moment, and I appreciate you guys for doing that and also bringing exposure. Let's wrap this up with a bow. You can listen to our show by visiting www.waleo.podbeam.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook, Urban Sports Scene. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us more realistically, Wally, at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.